Maybe my words got through to Mr. Kitson, because I was surprised to be called back to the farm a few days later to a ewe which had obviously suffered very little interference. The animal was in a field close to the house, and she was clearly bursting with lambs, so round and fat she could hardly waddle, but she looked bright and healthy.
"There's a bloody mix-up in there," Mr. Kitson said morosely. "I could feel two heads and God only knows how many feet. Didn't know where the hell I was."
"But you didn't try very hard."
"Nay, never tried at all."
"Well, we were making progress." As the farmer gripped the sheep round the neck, I felt behind her and dipped my hands in the bucket. For once, it was a warm morning. Looking back, my memories of lambing times have been of bitter winds searing the grass of the hill pasture, of chapped hands, chafed arms, gloves, scarves, and cold-nipped ears. For years after I left Glasgow, I kept waiting for the balmy early springs of Western Scotland. After 30 years, I am still waiting. And it has begun to dawn on me that it doesn't happen that way in Yorkshire. But this morning was one of the exceptions. The sun blazed from a sky of soft blue. There was no wind, but a gentle movement of the air rolled the fragrance of the moorland flowers and warm grass over me and around me as I knelt there. And I had my favourite job in front of me. I almost chuckled as I fished around inside the ewe. There was all the room in the world. Everything was moist and fresh and unspoilt, and it was child's play to fit the various jigsaws together. In about 30 seconds I had a lamb wriggling on the grass. In a few moments more, a second, then a third, and finally, to my delight, I reached away forward and found another little cloven foot and whisked it out into the world.
"Quadruplets!" I cried happily.
But the farmer didn't share my enthusiasm.
"Nowt but a bloody nuisance," he muttered. "She'd be far better with just two."
He paused and gave me a sour look.
"Any road. I reckon there wasn't no need to call ye. I could have done that job myself."
I looked at him sadly from my squatting position. Sometimes in our job you feel you just can't win. If you take too long, you're no good. If you're too quick, the visit wasn't necessary. I have never quite subscribed to the views of a cynical old colleague who once adjured me, "Never make a lambing look easy. Hold the buggers in for a few minutes if necessary." But at times, I felt he had a point. Anyway, I had my own satisfaction in watching the four lambs. So often I had pitied these tiny creatures and their entry into an uncharitable world, sometimes even of snow and ice, but today it was a joy to see them trying to struggle to their feet under the friendly sun, their woolly coats already drying rapidly. Their mother, magically deflated, was moving among them in a bemused manner as though she couldn't quite believe what she saw. As she nosed and licked them, her deep-throated chuckles were answered by the first treble quaverings of her family. I was listening enchanted to this conversation when Mr. Kitson spoke up.
"There's the ewe, lamb, to the day."
I looked up, and there indeed she was, trotting proudly past, her lamb close at her flank.
"Oh, yes, she looks fine," I said.
That was good to see, but my attention was caught by something else. I pointed across the grass.
"That ewe over there."
As a rule, all sheep look alike to me, but there was something about this one I recognized. A loss of wool from her back, a bare strip of skin stretched over the jutting ridge of her spinal column. Surely I couldn't be mistaken. The farmer followed my pointing finger.
"Aye, that's Tired Lass who was laid in the stable last time you were here."
He turned an expressionless gaze on me.
"The one you told me to get Malik to fetch."
But she was dying," I blurted out. The corner of Mr. Kitson's mouth twitched upwards in what must have been the nearest possible approach to a smile.
"Well, that's what you tell me, young fella."
He hunched his shoulders.
"Said you hadn't long to go, didn't you?"
I had no words to offer. I just gaped at him. I must have been the picture of bewilderment, and it seemed the farmer was puzzled too, because he went on.
"But I'll tell thou summut. I've been among sheep all me life, but I've never seen aught like it. That ewe just went to sleep."
"Is that so?"
"Aye, went to sleep, I tell you, and she stayed sleeping for 2 days.
"She slept for 2 days?"
"She did. I'm not joking nor jesting. I kept going into the stable, but she never halted. Lay there, peaceful as you like, all the first day, then all the second. Then, when I went in on third morning, she was standing there looking at me and ready for some grub.
Amazing.
I got to my feet. I must have a look at her. I really wanted to see what had become of that mass of information and tumefaction under her tail, and I approached her carefully, jockeying her bit by bit into the bottom corner of the field. There we faced each other for a few tense moments as I tried a few feints, and she responded with nimble sidesteps. Then, as I made my final swoop to catch her fleece, she eluded me effortlessly and shot past me with a thundering of hooves. I gave chase for 20 yards, but it was too hot, and Wellingtons aren't the ideal gear for running. In any case, I have long held the notion that if a vet can't catch his patient, there's nothing much to worry about. And as I walked back up the field, a message was tapping in my brain. I had discovered something. Discovered something by accident. The ewe's life had been saved, not by medicinal therapy, but simply by stopping her pain and allowing nature to do its own job of healing. It was a lesson I have never forgotten. That animals confronted with severe, continuous pain, and the terror and shock that goes with it, will often retreat, even into death. And if you can remove that pain, amazing things can happen. It is difficult to explain rationally, but I know that it is so. By the time I had got back to Mr. Kitson, the sun was scorching the back of my neck, and I could feel a trickle of sweat under my shirt. The big man was still watching the ewe, which had finished its gallop and was cropping the grass contentedly. "I can't get over it," he murmured, scratching the thin bristle on his jaw. "Two whole days and never a move." He turned to me and his eyes widened. "I tell her, young man, you'd just think she'd been drugged."